Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pull over into a lay-by, for heaven's sake.
Get out the thermos from the boot.
Get your blanket out and lay it out in a nearby cornfield.
What could be better? And enjoy Joyride.
Baked, boiled, roasted or chipped, potatoes are here to stay. Much like today's guest, the queen of contemporary art, it's Cornelia Parker.
Oh, welcome.
Yay!
How about that for an intro, eh?
I'm very pleased. That's
it
a good one.
Quickly from potatoes to fine art.
And now you've had a corned beef and pickle sandwich here today.
I had a corned beef and beetroot sandwich.
Corned beef and beetroot, which is actually Jim's favourite.
Yes.
It's his signature sandwich, which we get made up.
Wow.
For him,
yeah.
Do you like beetroot?
I do.
I don't really like beetroots very much. I think they're all right, but their colour, I can't look at that colour and it makes me feel...
You can also use the colour to use as a dye as well, to dye perhaps a beanie hat.
But I haven't got a beanie hat.
Well, a T-shirt, a pair of socks. Yeah, well, beetroot. I would like to advocate the beetroot as
clearly
what as in my top five vegetables.
What's your number one?
Onion.
Oh, I like onion.
Yeah, you didn't hesitate with that either.
Oh, no.
You've been storing that for a while, haven't you?
Do you know what? I was at a pub in southeast London called the Montague Arms in New Cross in, let me say, 1981, and they used to have competitions, and one of the competitions was who can eat the onion the first. And there'd be three, so you got three people on stage. I was one of them and two sailors. And I won, and the sailors got irate because I looked a bit new romantic, a bit foppy,
arty.
Frilly shirted. They wanted to have it out with me outside. Who ate the onion? How dare I eat the onion?
Because you
first?
Were better at eating onions than them.
And was it raw?
It was raw, eating a raw onion. That was the competition.
So it's your number one veg, raw onion?
Yeah, a raw onion for me, yeah. Ooh. Raw, cooked, boiled. You and I have both had a go in a steamroller.
We did.
It was about the Turner Prize, I think.
I think it's about 20 years of Turner Prize or 25 years.
So what we did was get in a steamroller and crushed some trophies.
And a trumpet or trombone.
Was this your idea?
I don't know if it was my idea. That's what I've done for a piece of work. I've steamrolled a load of silver plate, and it's called 30 Pieces of Silver. And it's.
Did you use a steamroller?
I used a steamroller. So for the first time. It was only 10 tonnes, though. You know, I got sort of addicted to squashing things, and then I ended up using a 250-ton press in an industrial works, and that was very satisfying. Also, I was living in Leytonstone, and my house is going to be knocked down for a motorway imminently for about 10 years, and that, you know, I'd have nightmares with steamrollers, and squashing a load of precious stuff or not so precious stuff would, you know, liberate me from that.
I like the idea of squashing things that will then liberate you from them. And having, would you? And when you said steamroller, was it a steamroller or just a big diesel powered?
No, it was a proper steamroller. Out of it.
How did you get hold of the steam? Did you ring
it? I hired this.
Is that easy
guy
to do?
No, it's not, especially not in November. But this guy had his own breaker's yard, and he had the steamroller, and he had been hired out for things before. He'd actually dressed as Barbara Windsor in some Carry On film, and he drove his steamroller over, you know, her bike, I think it was.
Yeah.
So I just think that's very funny. But yeah, anyway, and he told all his mates who came along with their kids to wash the squashing, because I was squashing about 1,000 pieces of, silver plate.
Fantastic.
And they said that it was their dream as a steamroller driver. It was their wet dream to squash such stuff.
It's such a great thing to do. I mean, I think what a great artwork. I did once, I was on tour with Squeeze in America, and I built a small Corvette Stingray model, which was about sort of the size of my hand, but maybe a bit bigger, plastic kit sort of thing. And I spent quite a long time. And for some reason, where I had the chopped up end of a finger, which we put in the driver's seat, as the driver was the finger sort of thing. And I spent quite a long time, but then I thought I didn't know what to do with it. So Glenn Tilbrook said, I think it would be a good idea to see if we could get the bus to jump over it. So in a car park, we got the Silver Eagle bus with a ramp 6 inches off of the ground or something like that. And we put the little model Corvette just in front of the ramp, and the bus went up. It didn't fly over
it
squashed. And I was rather heartbroken to see my little Corvette squash, but I felt as though it
completely
done
crushed thing.
So when you did that artwork, I felt this is somebody doing it really properly.
When you rang up the the breakers, did you say, is it possible for me to hire a steamroller to crush a trumpet?
No, because there's only one trumpet in 100, 1,000 other objects.
No,
right?
But how do you broach the? Do you tell them what you want?
Well, I'd explain that I was an artist, and they always expect you to be mad if you're an artist, and
then you say,
I've got this idea, which I like to squash some stuff, and he goes, oh, squash some stuff. Yeah. I knew I got him hooked at that moment. So he was great. He was really great. Also, he had a concrete driveway, which is another thing that was needed, otherwise the stuff would just embed itself in the tarmac. Yeah. So he had the two ingredients, which was a working steamroller and a concrete path.
Mm. I used to like watching the steamroller. You could always hear them coming around the corner, couldn't you?
Yes.
There was a terrible rumbling.
And a lovely smell. There's a very nice smell they have. That's for the aroma of the
Have you been to the Dorset Steam Fair?
I haven't. I long to go. I've been to other steam fairs. I'd like to go to that one.
Is that the one?
I think it's the biggest one in the country. Yes. And we went there last with my daughter when she was, about 6 or something, and she's got red hair. And there was all these red-haired children running around, most probably from the Irish, contingent. And so we lost her at one point. We just trying to check all these red-haired children now. But they had a whole nightlife there, which we didn't really stay for. But, they had bare-knuckle boxing. They had dancing. It was just amazing.
I went to one near Canterbury. It's on every year. I went last year. And there was some bare-knuckle fighting going on, which is quite frightening when you close up. And also, the other interesting thing, there was no one watching it. Oh, I'll tell you what happened. This is what made me laugh. We're having these two blokes having a proper old punch-up in the ring. And then a fella came... There was no one watching, so I was watching. And this fella came up with a couple of ice creams. And they both stopped and had an ice cream and then carried on fighting.
Oh, it was probably father and son, they were brothers.
team working together.
Oh, but they also had the Wall of Death. The Wall of Death, which is that thing like a drum, and that is the most scary thing, as a spectator.
I think the Wall of Death also is made of wood, which makes it even more, they have a Ball of Death that's made of metal.
A Ball of Death.
But the Wall of Death is more frightening because it's all sort of wooden and vaguely flimsy. And an old motorbike as well that goes around.
There's a few motorbikes and they kind of do tricks. And it was just jaw-dropping. You did feel like you were in another era. Then they had this lovely indoor tent which had things you could buy, like flour made from wheat that they made at the fair, using all these steam-driven things.
Yeah.
But when we look back over Dorset Steam Fair, at the end of it, there's this big black cloud of smoke, basically. It must be one of the most polluting things that...
Well, is it steam, does it, though? Is it steam? Is it just all
kind of... Well, I think they have to power it from coal.
Exactly.
So it's coal.
But if you said
fair.
But it was like going to another age, but if we were talking about travel, if you could travel to another age, where would you go to walk around for the day?
I don't know. You see, every age except this one has been always crap for women. We're in the best possible place we've been, now in history, or perhaps 10 years ago in history or whatever. I don't know, I quite like the 60s, 60s, 70s.
But weren't
London.
You there then anyway?
Not in London, not in the 60s. It was a little bit before.
Where were you in the 60s?
I was in my mum's stomach. No, I wasn't. I lie. I was a teenager.
Where?
South Cheshire, not far from Crewe.
Oh, right.
That's where I went to school.
But if you went back to the 1960s London, where would you... is that where you want to go?
Well, Kings Road, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know. See the groovy people.
Yeah, well, you know, Gene Shrimpton.
In the 70s.
And David Bailey. I mean, it just had a lot of mystique, didn't it? Yoko Ono and John Lennon getting it together that, you know... No, yeah. It's an incredible time. I mean, there was a
Did
lot of...
Did it really happen?
I don't know. That's why I want to go there to find
exactly,
out.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My father was an abysmal driver, really bad driver. And I remember we had a standard 10 car. Do you know what they look like?
Yes.
A little jelly mould.
Yep.
And we went to Wales in it, which was a terrible ordeal.
Mammoth journey.
Because there's five of us stuffed into this tiny car. Oh, no, actually, we got the car there. We went in this other car, small car. I think it was Morris. And we got into the most mountainous bits of Snowdonia. And this car comes around the corner and takes the side off our car.
Oh.
You know, luckily, none of us are... You know,
on their
rendered
side.
Limbless. And then my father bought this standard 10 car off a miner. And it was
so the car you went in got destroyed.
Yeah. And then we came back in this jelly mould of a car, which my parents had for about 10 years.
Wow.
And it was covered in soot. It was covered in black. And we had to wash, you know, we had to spend all our holiday time washing this car. But my father, it just was having crashes all the time. He was just really bad driver.
Was he a really bad driver?
Yeah.
So he almost went on holiday, almost half expecting to have to buy a new car because he was like, he just knew something was going to happen to
I remember
to this one.
I was in the back of the car with my boyfriend. I was grown up by then and my parents were in the front. And my father just got this new car, newish car, but he can accelerate and no car he'd ever been in could accelerate. So he decides to accelerate and overtake this truck in front and we're heading to this big hill and we don't know what's going to be coming the other way. And I screamed at him to pull back, which he did. And luckily, because, you know, another truck came the other way. But he, for some reason, he didn't seem to have much road skills.
No luck at all.
And I've had two quite bad car accidents.
Have you?
Yeah. The first one was in Wales and I shattered my pelvis in 15 places in this car accident. I was only going about 5 miles per hour and this other car came very fast and whacked me. The very day that Ayrton Senna died was the day that I had this accident. Anyway, so I think I spent most of my time in post-traumatic shock and not that enjoyable of enjoying sort of car journeys.
Yeah. How about
other? I mean, you must travel to, you know, because you have exhibitions and...
Different countries
around the world. Do you enjoy that sort of travelling out to different places?
Mm. I love going to China, for example.
What did you do in China? What?
I was in an exhibition called Guangzhou Triennale or Biennale. So it's a biennale in a museum in Guangzhou, which is like the old canton. And it was really quite amazing because there's all these skyscrapers and I was trying to find wood to make a piece of work with. So I went at old wood because all these lovely old homes had been knocked down to make this very quick skyscraper city, and the smog everywhere, it's really bad. And I go out to the edge of town to see if I can buy wood or get wood, and went to a wood yard, which was amazing. And there's all these poor people in tiny little lean-to dwellings, you know, it's so different from what I just seen in back in the centre of town. But I think my favourite thing is to go and make a piece of work in a country.
Oh.
Because you kind of get to know it in a different way.
What did you make in China?
I made a suspended wood piece that was it looked like a big stack of wood was leaning against the wall, but it wasn't. It was just suspended in front of the wall and off the floor. So it was called No Man's Land. But many, many years ago, I was in the São Paulo Biennale in Brazil, and I decided I was going to make a piece with a coffin. I had the idea. I wanted to get a hardwood coffin, splinter it, make it into matches. And then I had my car accident. I was in hospital. It was my shattered pelvis. And the British Council said, oh, yes, about that coffin. We've got a few undertakers that we want to take you to. And I said, I've gone off the idea. And they said, don't forget you're British. You know, like, get your finger out, don't be so silly. So yeah. So when I got to Brazil, I went to all these undertakers, but they seemed to be trying to sell me a whole funeral when all I wanted was the coffin.
Yeah, they didn't realise it was an artwork.
And then I got the coffin, finally, for the right price. And then I went to the studio in São Paulo with some other artists, you know, Brazilian artists, and this coffin gets carried in, you know, and they put it down in my space, and they were looking at me as if I was completely mad. And then I put it in the Biennale, along with my exploded shed.
Oh, that's, I love the exploded shed, that's, yes, great, isn't it?
Really, really great.
Did you have something at the Whitney last year? On the roof?
Oh, that's the Met, Metropolitan Museum.
Was that,
yeah,
the Met? Because I think
the Psycho Barn.
The year before, yeah, the Psycho House.
Psycho Barn, yeah.
But yeah, I saw it was a couple of years ago.
It was a facsimile of the Psycho House set, made out of an old red barn from upstate New York. So it was a red Psycho House, and it was put on the roof of the Met as a, you know, they have an annual sculpture commission.
Did you just see it from the pavement, or could you go in it?
You could see it from the park. It's quite good because everybody could look up at the Met and see this Psycho House, and then it's a bit like seeing it on the hill.
Yes.
And then they put this poster outside the Met, massive poster, you know, a big banner, which is supposed to be about 3 times the length of this room. Cornelia Park, Psycho Bomb. I was thinking, oh, yes, I've made it.
That's nice, isn't it?
It was. It's lovely.
To have a big banner. So tell us, take us through this journey, the inception of the Psycho Barn to the fruition. I mean, how did you
think it up?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I went to New York and I looked at the space, you know, on the roof, you know, the curator, the person who asked me to make the piece. And I just thought it's the best possible place in the universe to make a piece of work for, because you've got New York out there. It's just...
the skyline.
Yeah, just so beautiful. And Central Park, and just incredible. And all these, quite a lot of these buildings, you know, are attached to films, you know. Like the Dakota Building is Rosemary's Baby, and John Lennon. You know, lots of very filmic. And the first idea I had was to put a red barn on the roof, because Central Park used to be farmland, and it used to be New Amsterdam. That's what they're going to call New York, New Amsterdam. Yeah. And so I was thinking about Dutch barns. I was thinking about the farms that used to be where the Met was. There was also an amazing shanty town on Central Park. It was called Hooversville. This is the terrible depression. You know, people were built houses, shanty houses, on Central Park. And so they named it Hooversville after Hoover. So the history of the park seemed to be all these provisional buildings. And in the Met, they have Edward Hopper paintings of, yeah, red barns. Edward Hopper painted this painting called A House by the Railroad. And I read that Hitchcock loved this painting and loved Hopper and made his Psycho House based on House by the Railroad. So that's where I got the two, yeah, things coming together, the red barn and the...
Who was murdered in the red... Maria Martin? Someone was murdered
in the red barn. That's right. That's, yeah, right. The murder at the red barn. I've got an early film of that from the 1930s.
Yes, that's a British film, isn't it?
Yeah, Murder at the Red Barn.
Was that an American barn?
Maria Martin is murdered.
Uh-huh. Maria Martin and the murder of in the Red Barn. Yeah.
But, you know, all the politicians in America, you know, usually do their campaigning outside red barns.
Why is that, then?
I think it's because it's associated with wholesomeness.
And folksyism.
Folksyism and all that stuff. Yeah. And, you know, it's long been processed by the Americans to be this kind of, you know, cutie, you know, whatever.
He's a reliable fellow. He's got a barn. I mean, I must say, if I know somebody with a barn, they must know what they're doing somehow, mustn't they? You know.
You do, but if you're watching a film with a barn in it, you would expect someone to be murdered in it.
Yes, or going to hiding in it.
That's because we're British.
I'm rather looking forward to, if I see a film with a barn, I'm rather looking forward to seeing their storage arrangements. For me, that's drama enough.
Yeah.
Seeing how their bales are stacked and their...
That'd be an Oscar-winning movie, wouldn't it?
Mm. I was brought up on a small holding, so I'm a bit of a farm girl, really. So that, you know, resonated for me, you know, the idea of the barn.
Did you grow up on a farm?
Yeah, I did until I was about 14, and then we moved into a small town.
What sort of farm was it?
It was a tithed cottage with land, growing beetroot, amongst other things.
Mm, nice.
And damsons and, you know, raspberries and strawberries and blackcurrants and lots of root vegetables. All these lovely things that we had when I was a kid growing up, and my parents used to boil it all to a pulp in a pressure cooker.
Well, boil everything and turn it into jam.
Or just turned it into nourishment that we were supposed to consume. But
it sounds like you were self-sufficient.
We were, more or less, because we had cows and we could make butter until I broke the butter churn. Which meant that I had to make the butter by going like this with a jam jar, you know. So that was my punishment for breaking the butter churn.
Another thing I like that you threw a teapot off the cliffs?
White Cliffs of Dover.
Yeah. I've done that as well. Chucked stuff off, but I never found it.
I put a red ribbon to it, I think. I marked it in some way, and then I had these twin boys who used to help me. They would go and locate, you know, the objects as I threw them off.
So the next time I throw something off the cliffs, I should tie a red ribbon onto it.
But what was the work called that you threw out?
Object that fell off the White Cliffs of Dover.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's something about the White Cliffs of Dover, which is very much about Britain and the edge of England and, you know, us and them, you know. Vera Lynn singing about the White Cliffs of Dover. So it's about nationalism. And, you know, the teapots are a bit like that too. You know, they're part of our Victorian Commonwealth stroke colonial past. And I was rejecting it by throwing it off to the cliff.
Is it true, I wonder? I was told that when the Romans first came to invade, the men of Kent appeared on the cliffs of Dover. There weren't that many of them, but they appeared with their blue painted faces, you know, like say there were 400 of them, but that wasn't enough to see them, you know. But the Romans just had one reconnaissance ship to come out and have a look, but they all appeared and joined hands at the top to try and frighten the Romans off.
Lovely.
And then the Romans went back, the blue faced fellows and their families said, well, that's got rid of them. That's what they thought. And then the Romans come back and, of course, outnumbered.
Rest is history.
The rest is history. That's right. Exactly. We've never looked back.
What was it they used for the blueness?
Woad.
Yeah, but what is woad?
It's what they use for the blueness.
You mean what's woad? What's woad made from?
Yeah. I know how to do red. If they'd said to me, the Romans are coming, we want red-faced people, I'd say the beetroot.
I'm your man.
But if they said to me, we want blue faces...
You would have lit up. I've got loads of beetroot here. Come on, I'll smear it all over your faces.
But this is the days before face paint.
Yeah.
That you know that you can buy in a shop.
That is safe and has been chemically tested and everything, yeah.
Yeah, so where do you get your blue?
It must be some kind of plant, don't you think?
It'd be a lichen. Do you reckon? Ground-up bluebells? What's your favourite tunnel? Got one?
Oh, tunnel? Oh, I don't like tunnels much, I must admit.
Do you not?
No, I prefer bridges.
But if there's a choice about going a huge hill, fighting through the undergrowth, meeting the hill dwellers who aren't agreeable, or going through a nice tunnel, what would you do?
Oh, I might go meet the natives. I always like to meet a native or two.
Even disagreeable hill dwellers.
They're most probably relatives of mine.
How do you get about London?
How do I get about London?
Yeah, have you got a bike?
No.
Roller skates?
No. I either walk or bus. I love buses. And I like normal trains. I go by Kentish Town, where I live, is great because you've got normal trains, you've got the overground.
You say normal trains, what's a non-normal train?
Well, the overground is not.
Oh,
really,
I see.
Yeah. And then there's the underground, which is not a normal train.
Yes.
And then there's a normal train.
Do you know what I found recently, talking about the underground trains? The ones I remember the most, the pattern on the seats, was orange and yellow oblongs the material that covered it. But you can get all manner of furniture made out of
all the materials
from the trains that are going way back to when the first began.
Oh, how lovely. Is that through the shop?
You go to the London Transport Museum. But if you look on that, it's fantastic.
Oh,
I didn't realise how many different seat coverings there was over
like
the years.
Scottish tartans. You
know, yeah, and there's some fantastic ones. There's my favourite is one, it's kind of, I don't know when it was, in the 20s or 30s, or it's leaves. So they'd obviously started sending the trains out of town into the greenery.
Into the metro land.
And yeah, and then the patterns on the seats, the little leaves.
The British Underground have got brilliant design, you know, yes, going way back.
Do you know they based a lot of the more Art Deco looking ones and the concrete ones and the underground part? One of them, I think it's Gants Hill, is an exact replica of one of the bigger stations in Moscow.
Oh.
Because the fellow that designed it had been in Moscow and had looked at their underground stations, made loads of sketches and thought this works rather well.
Gants Hill, wow. Yeah. Have you been to it?
No, I did visit Arnos Grove just to admire the station.
Well, I know Arnos Grove. I've been there. That's great, isn't it? I really like that.
Have you been to Moscow or Leningrad?
I haven't been.
I've been to St. Petersburg, but I would like to go to Moscow, yeah.
I went there in 1986. But the undergrounds are just gorgeous. They call them the people's palaces, or people's palace, you know, because it's for the people. But they've got chandeliers, you know, it's most gorgeous things.
The Soviet architecture, I really sort of was very brutal. I mean, I didn't want to live in it, but I love looking at it.
No, it's...
I love all that stuff. Do you like brutalist architecture?
Oh, I do. I love it.
Yeah.
Beautiful, really love it. But all the water towers, you know, they get everywhere. I mean, those are brutalist architecture as well.
I love those, yeah.
Yes, it's not just limited to bus garages. I mean, they spread right out. Hospitals
water towers,
sometimes.
Yeah.
Do
they still use those water towers?
A friend of mine's bought one.
Is it one of those mushroom-shaped ones?
No, it's not. It used to be a metal frame with a box on the top.
Yeah.
So it wasn't particularly beautiful.
Do you know who used to live in one of those?
Who's that?
Cat Weasel. Do you remember him? Do you remember Cat Weasel?
I live in a water. I didn't know that.
Cat Weasel lived in a water tank.
Oh, how sweet.
And he was a medieval wizard who was transported into the 1970s and ended up living in a water tower and trying to find his way around the modern world and finding it difficult to the point that he was generally in tears by the end of each episode.
It sounds like me.
And here's a message from our sponsors.
Have you ever considered moving to a new house with a garage on a new estate in the new town?
A new town with new shops, a new industrial estate on the ring road, and a new wife and children.
The new town.
Near you.
Today.
Have you ever sort of done something that you hadn't thought you could do at all and had gone on some journey where you've learned some completely new thing and have taken a new thing or have taken something out of your comfort zone and achieved it?
I remember wanting to interview Noam Chomsky.
Who?
Noam Chomsky. He's a philosopher of linguistics at MIT, but he more than that, he's one of the world's great intellects and very political. He's really political. And I was consumed with the horror of what, you know, recognizing what climate change was going to dish up for us about 12 years ago. And I was asked to make a piece of work for a biennale in Sharjah, which is in the Middle East, about, you know, green things. So I thought I'd film an interview with Noam Chomsky, who hadn't spoken about climate change yet either. And Adam, do you know Adam Curtis?
You know who you mean exactly?
Yeah, and I know Adam not very well, but I was telling him I really wanted to do this thing, but I was too scared. And he goes, no, do it. You know, he was really urging me to, you know, just go and do what you want to do sort of thing. So I went off to America and I went and filmed Noam Chomsky about the end of the world vis-a-vis climate change. And he was actually lovely, really great. And his secretary came in and said, right, no more questions. And I'd told him at the beginning I'd got 8 questions for him, you know, just in case he was going to just ask one and he'd spend all the time,
yes,
you know. And then he said, oh, no, I think Cornelia has one more question, you know. And so she goes off and it's about fear in America, you know, people not wanting to acknowledge that this thing was happening. And he was brilliant. He just went on this monologue about fear, which was, you know, the best thing about the interview. And and then I presented that, the Sharjah Biennale, and I didn't fly out there. You know, I didn't, I was trying not to make a big carbon
footprint. How did you get there?
I didn't go.
What about a sailboat?
Yeah, what about a sailboat?
That'd be have you nice, got one?
Yes, that would be nice. Yeah,
I'm not. I'm not Greta, you know.
And I think it'd be, I'm with you. I mean, I'd do that. I'd go to America on one. If
have you been? No.
On not on a sailboat, but I can see no reason why not. Do what about a hot air balloon?
Oh God, no!
I'd quite like that because it's silent and you can be very nosy with a hot air balloon. You can hover right over people's gardens and they're not even aware you're there.
Except for the big shadow that goes across the lawn.
Yeah, except, exactly, where you're completely sort of like an eclipse of the sun is you that's coming up and blotting their sort of light out. But the only other thing, I think the trouble with a hot air balloon is you're not completely, you can't just steer it like you can a sort of...
What about if you got on a trade wind?
Yeah, but what about if you didn't want to go that way?
I wouldn't get in one of those for love. No money.
No, me neither. That balloon. Basket.
No.
A basket.
No way. Just the fact that I know that there's a bit of wicker under my arse between that
but that's
and
how you
the
come
land.
Here. But that's what you wear when you come here.
Anyway, it's time to say thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for those insights. Thank you for putting us that information in our minds about exploding sheds, about crushed tubers and red barns.
And appropriately tossed off teapots.
Thank you, Cornelia Park.
Thank you, thank you.
Well, there goes Cornelia, travelling home in a bubble-shaped car.
Is it a bubble-shaped car?
Jelly mould-shaped car?
It's a standard 10 that she said she had.
That's what it's called. This podcast was produced and edited by Molly Stewart.
Sound engineers were James Stewart and George Latham.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.